citizens of state. No. No.
Siri.
No.
The girl turned rigid and squeezed her eyelids shut.
No. No, I don't want to. Don't touch me.
Siri's face suddenly changed. Hardened. Her voice became metallic. Cold and hostile. Resounding with threatening, cruel mockery.
You have come all this way with her, Triss Merigold? All the way here? You have come too far, 14th one. I warned you.
Who are you?
Triss shuddered, but she kept her voice under control.
You will know when the time comes.
I will know now.
The magician raised her arms, extended them abruptly, putting all her strength into a spell of identification. The magic curtain burst, but behind it was a second, a third, a fourth. Triss sank to her knees with a groan. But reality continued to burst. More doors opened, a long, endless row leading to nowhere, to emptiness.
You are wrong, 14th one,
the metallic, inhuman voice sneered.
You've mistaken the stars reflected on the surface of the lake at night for the heavens.
Do not touch. Do not touch that child.
She is not a child.
Siri's lips moved, but Triss saw that the girl's eyes were dead, glazed and vacant.
She is not a child, the voice repeated. She is the flame. The white flame which will set light to the world. She is the elder blood, Hen Ihir, the blood of elves, the seed which will not sprout but burst into flame, the blood which will be defiled when Teth Dereat arrives, the time of end. Va'esa Dereat Ab Iagyal.
Are you foretelling death?
Shouted Triss.
Is that all you can do? Foretell death? For everyone? Them? Her? Me?
You are already dead, 14th one. Everything in you has already died.
By the power of the spheres,
moaned the magician, activating what little remained of her strength and drawing her hand through the air.
I throw a spell on you by water, fire, earth, and air. I conjure you in thought, in dream and in death, by all that was, by what is, and by what will be. I cast my spell on you. Who are you? Speak.
Siri turned her head away. The vision of the staircase leading down into the depths of the abyss disappeared, dissolved, and in its place appeared a grey, leaden sea, foaming. Crests of waves breaking, and the seagull's cries burst through the silence once more.
Fly, said the voice through the girl's lips. It is time. Go back to where you came from, 14th of the hell. Fly on the wings of a gull and listen to the cry of other seagulls. Listen carefully.
I conjure you.
You cannot. Fly, seagull!
And suddenly, the wet, salty air was there again, roaring with the gale, and there was the flight, a flight with no beginning and no end. Seagulls cried wildly, cried and commanded.
Triss? Siri? Forget about him. Don't torture him. Forget. Forget, Triss. Forget. Triss. Triss.
Triss. Triss?
She opened her eyes, tossed her head on the pillow, and moved her numb hands.
Geralt?
I'm here. How are you feeling?
She cast her eyes around. She was in her chamber, lying on the bed, on the best bed in the whole of Kaer Morhen.
What is happening to Siri?
She is asleep.
How long?
Too long, he interrupted.
He covered her with a duvet and put his arms around her. As he leaned over, the wolf's head medallion swayed just above her face.
What you did was not the best of ideas, Triss.
Everything is all right.
She trembled in his embrace.
That's not true, she thought. Nothing's all right.
She turned her face so that the medallion didn't touch her. There were many theories about the properties of witcher amulets, and none advised magicians to touch them during the equinox.
Did we say anything during the trance?
You, nothing. You were unconscious throughout. Ciri, just before she woke up, said, Va essa dereath ip igian.
She knows the Elder speech.
Not enough to say a whole sentence.
A sentence which means something is ending.
The magician wiped her face with her hand.
Geralt, this is a serious matter. The girl is an exceptionally powerful medium. I don't know what or who she is contacting, but I think there are no limits to her connection. Something wants to take possession of her, something which is too powerful for me. I am afraid for her. Another trance could end in mental illness. I have no control over it. Don't know how to... can't. If it proved necessary, I would not be able to block or suppress her powers. I would even not be capable, if there were no other option, of permanently extinguishing them. You have to get help from another magician. A more gifted one. More experienced. You know who I'm talking about.
I do.
He turned his head away, clenched his lips.
Don't resist. Don't defend yourself. I can guess why you turned to me rather than her. Overcome your pride, crush your rancor and obstinacy. There is no point to it. You'll torture yourself to death. And you are risking Ciri's health and life in the process. Another trance is liable to be more dangerous to her than the Trial of Grasses. Ask Yennefer for help, Geralt.
And you, Triss?
What about me?
She swallowed with difficulty.
I'm not important. I let you down. I let you down in everything. I was your mistake, nothing more.
Mistakes, he said with effort, are also important to me. I don't cross them out of my life or memory, and I never blame others for them. You are important to me, Triss, and always will be. You never let me down, never. Believe me.
She remained silent a long while.
I will stay until spring,
she said finally, struggling against her shaking voice.
I will stay with Ciri. I will watch over her, day and night. I will be with her day and night, and when spring is here... When spring is here, we will take her to Melitela's temple in Elender. The thing that wants to possess her might not be able to reach her in the temple. And then you will ask Yennefer for help.
All right, Triss.
Thank you.
Geralt?
Yes?
Ciri said something else, didn't she? Something only you heard. Tell me what it was.
No, he protested, and his voice quivered. No, Triss.
Please.
She wasn't speaking to me.
I know. She was speaking to me. Tell me. Please.
After coming to, when I picked her up, she whispered, Forget about him. Don't torture him.
I won't,
she said quietly.
But I can't forget. Forgive me.
I am the one who ought to be asking for forgiveness, and not only asking you.
You love her that much,
she stated, not asking. That much, he admitted in a whisper, after a long moment of silence.
Geralt?
Yes, Triss?
Stay with me tonight.
Triss,
only stay.
All right.
Not long after Midinvierne, the snow stopped falling. The frost came. Triss stayed with Ciri day and night. She watched over her. She surrounded her with care, visible and invisible. The girl woke up shouting almost every night. She was delirious, holding her cheek and crying with pain. The magician calmed her with spells and elixirs, put her to sleep, cuddling and rocking her in her arms. and then she herself would be unable to sleep for a long time, thinking about what Ciri had said in her sleep, and after she came to. And she felt a mounting fear. Va'esa dreat ep aegean. Something is ending. That is how it was for 10 days and nights, and finally it passed. It ended, disappeared without a trace. Ciri calmed. She slept peacefully with no nightmares and no dreams. But Triss kept a constant watch. She did not leave the girl for a moment. She surrounded her with care, visible and invisible.
Faster, Ciri! Lunge! Attack! Dodge! Half pirouette, thrust, dodge! Balance! Balance with your left arm or you'll fall from the comb. And you'll hurt your womanly attributes.
What?
Nothing. Aren't you tired? We'll take a break if you like.
No, Lambert. I can go on. I'm not that weak, you know. Shall I try jumping over every other post?
Don't you dare. You might fall, and then Merigold will tear my head off.
I won't fall.
I've told you once, and I'm not going to say it again. Don't show off. Steady on your legs. And breathe, Ciri. Breathe. You're panting like a dying mammoth.
That's not true.
Don't squeal. Practice. Attack. Dodge. Parry. Half pirouette. Parry. Full pirouette. Steadier on the posts, damn it. Don't wobble. Lunge. Thrust. Faster. Half pirouette. Jump and cut. That's it.
Very good.
Really? Was that really very good, Lambert?
Who said so?
You did. A moment ago.
Slip of the tongue. Attack. Half pirouette. Dodge. And again.
Ciri, where was the parry? How many times do I have to tell you? After you dodge, you always parry. Deliver a blow with the blade to protect your head and shoulders. Always. Even when I'm only fighting one opponent.
You never know what you're fighting. You never know what's happening behind you. You always have to cover yourself. Foot and sword work. It's got to be a reflex. Reflex, understand? You mustn't forget that. You forget it in a real fight and you're finished. Again. At last, that's it. See how much a parry lands? You can take any strike from it. You can cut backwards from it if you have to. Right, show me a pirouette and a thrust backwards.
Ha!
Very good. You see the point now? Has it got through to you?
I'm not stupid.
You're a girl. Girls don't have brains.
Lambert, if Triss heard that...
If ifs and ands were pots and pans. All right, that's enough. Come down, we'll take a break.
I'm not tired.
But I am. I said a break. Come down from the comb.
Turning a somersault.
What do you think? Like a hen off its roost? Go on, jump. Don't be afraid, I'm here for you.
Ha!
Nice. Very good. For a girl. You can take off the blindfold now.
Triss, maybe that's enough for today. What do you think? Maybe we could take the sleigh and ride down the hill. The sun's shining, the snow's sparkling so much it hurts the eyes, the weather's beautiful. Don't lean out or you'll fall from the window. Oh, let's go sleighing, Triss. Suggest that again in elder speech and we'll end the lesson there. Move away from the window. Come back to the table. Ciri, how many times do I have to ask you? Stop waving that sword about and put it away. It's my new sword. It's real. A witcher's sword, made of steel, which fell from heaven. Really? Geralt said so, and he never lies. You know that?
Oh, yes, I know that.
I've got to get used to this sword. Uncle Vesemir had it adjusted just right for my weight, height and arm length. I've got to get my hand and wrist accustomed to it. Accustom yourself to your heart's content, but outside, not here. Well, I'm listening. You wanted to suggest we get the sleigh out in elder speech. So, suggested. What's sleigh?
Sleigh, as a noun. Islith, as a verb.
Aha. Vian I slither ilia? Don't end a question that way. It's impolite. You form questions using intonation. But the children from the islands, you're not learning the local Skellige jargon, but classical elder speech. And why am I learning this speech, tell me? So that you know it. It's fitting to learn things you don't know. Anyone who doesn't know other languages is handicapped. But people only speak the common tongue anyway. True, but some speak more than just it. I warrant, Ciri, that it is better to count yourself amongst those few than amongst everyone. So, I'm listening. A full sentence. The weather today is beautiful, so let's get the sleigh.
Elaine... Elaine tydd a tegana a fein me slither?
Very good.
Ha! So let's get the sleigh. We will, but let me finish applying my makeup. And who are you putting makeup on for exactly?
Myself. A woman accentuates her beauty for her own self-esteem.
Do you know what? I feel pretty poorly too. Don't laugh, Triss.
Come here. Sit on my knee. Put the sword away. I've already asked you.
Thank you.
Now, take that large brush and powder your face.
Not so much, girl. Not so much.
Look in the mirror. See how pretty you are?
I can't see any difference. I'll do my eyes, all right? What are you laughing at? You always pick your eyes. I want to, too.
Fine. Here you are. Put some shadow on your eyelids with this.
Siri, don't close both your eyes or you won't see anything. You're smudging your whole face.
Take a tiny bit and only skim over the eyelids. Skim, I said.
Let me. I'll just spread it a little.
Close your eyes. Now open them.
Oh,
see the difference? A tiny bit of shadow won't do any harm, even to such beautiful eyes as yours. The elves knew what they were doing when they invented eyeshadow.
Elves? You didn't know?
Makeup is an elvish invention. We've learned a lot of useful things from the elder people, and we've given bloody little back in return. Now take the pencil and draw a thin line across your upper lids, just above the lashes.
Siri, what are you doing? Don't laugh. My eyelid's trembling, that's why.
Part your lips a little and it'll stop trembling. See?
Oh.
Come on, now we'll go and stun the witches with our beauty. It's hard to find a prettier sight. And then we'll take the sleigh and smudge our makeup in the deep snowdrifts.
And we'll make ourselves up again.
No, we'll tell Lambert to warm the bathroom and we'll take a bath.
Again? Lambert says we're using up too much fuel with our baths.
Lambert ken me a bath I pers.
What? I didn't understand.
With time, you'll master the idioms too. We've still got a lot of time for studying before spring. But now, va ien I sleidhar mi Elaine Luned.
Here on this engraving. No, damn it, not on that one, on this one. This is, as you already know, a ghoul. Tell us, Siri, what you've learned about ghouls. Hey, look at me. What the devil have you got on your eyelids?
Greater self-esteem.
What? Never mind, I'm listening.
The ghoul, Uncle Vesemir, is a corpse-devouring monster. It can be seen in cemeteries, in the vicinity of barrows, anywhere the dead are buried, at necropolia, on battlegrounds, on fields of battle.
So it's only a danger to the dead, is that right?
No, not only. A ghoul may also attack the living if it's hungry or falls into a fury. If, for example, there's a battle, a lot of people killed.
What's the matter, Siri?
Nothing.
Siri, listen. Forget about that. That will never return.
I saw. In Sodden and in Transriver. Entire fields. They were lying there, being eaten by wolves and wild dogs. Birds were picking at them. I guess there were ghouls there, too.
That's why you're learning about ghouls now, Siri. When you know about something, it stops being a nightmare. When you know how to fight something, it stops being so threatening. So, how do you fight a ghoul, Siri?
With a silver sword. The ghoul is sensitive to silver.
And to what else?
Bright light and fire.
So you can fight it with light and fire?
You can, but it's dangerous. A witcher doesn't use light or fire because it makes it harder to see. Every light creates a shadow, and shadows make it harder to get your bearings. One must always fight in darkness by moon or starlight.
Quite right. You've remembered it well, clever girl. And now, look here at this engraving. Well, true enough, it is not a beautiful... creature. It's a Greavir. A Greavir is a type of ghoul. It looks very much like a ghoul, but is considerably larger. He can also be told apart, as you can see, by these three bony combs on his skull. The rest is the same as any other corpse-eater. Take note of the short, blunt claws, adapted for digging up graves and churning the earth. Strong teeth for shattering bones, and a long, narrow tongue used to lick the decaying marrow from them. Such stinking marrow is a delicacy for the Greavir.
What's the matter?
Nothing. You're completely pale. And green. You don't eat enough. Did you eat breakfast?
Yes, I did.
What was I? Aha! I almost forgot. Remember, because this is important. Greavirs, like ghouls and other monsters in this category, do not have their own ecological niche. They are relicts from the age of the interpenetration of spheres. Killing them does not upset the order and interconnections of nature which prevail in our present sphere. In this sphere, these monsters are foreign, and there is no place for them. Do you understand, Ciri?
I do, Uncle Vesemir. Geralt explained it to me. I know all that. An ecological niche is...
All right, that's fine. I know what it is. If Geralt has explained it to you, you don't have to recite it to me. Let us return to the Greavir. Greavirs appear quite rarely, fortunately, because they're bloody dangerous sons of bitches. The smallest wound inflicted by a Greavir will infect you with corpse venom. Which elixir is used to treat corpse venom poisoning, Ciri?
Golden Aureole.
Correct, but it is better to avoid infection to begin with. That is why, when fighting a Greavir, you must never get close to the bastard. You always fight from a distance and strike from a leap.
And where's it best to strike one?
We're just getting to that. Look.
Once more, Ciri. We'll go through it slowly so that you can master each move. Now, I'm attacking you with tears, taking the position as if to thrust. Why are you retreating? Because I know it's a feint. You can move into a wide sinistra or strike with upper quarter, and I'll retreat and parry with a counterfeint.
Is that so? And if I do this?
Oh, it was supposed to be slow. What did I do wrong, Cohen?
Nothing. I'm just taller and stronger than you are.
That's not fair.
There's no such thing as a fair fight. You have to make use of every advantage and every opportunity that you get. By retreating, you gave me the opportunity to put more force into the strike. Instead of retreating, you should have executed a half pirouette to the left and tried to cut at me from below with corte dextra, under the chin, in the cheek or throat.
As if you'd let me. You'll do a reverse pirouette and get my neck from the left before I can parry. How am I meant to know what you're doing?
You have to know, and you do know.
Oh, sure.
Ciri, what we're doing is fighting. I'm your opponent. I want to and have to defeat you because my life is at stake. I'm taller and stronger than you, so I'm going to watch for opportunities to strike in order to avoid or break your parry, as you've just seen. What do I need a pirouette for? I'm already in Sinistra, see? What could be simpler than to strike with a seconde under the arm on the inside? If I slash your artery, you'll be dead in a couple of minutes. Defend yourself.
Ah!
Very good. A beautiful quick parry. See how exercising your wrist is coming useful? And now pay attention. A lot of fencers make the mistake of executing a standing parry and freeze for a second, and that's just when you can catch them out. Strike. Like so.
Ha! Ah!
Beautiful. Now, jump away. Jump away immediately. Pirouette. I could have a dagger in my left hand. Good. Very good. And now, Ciri, what am I going to do now?
How am I to know?
Watch my feet. How is my body weight distributed? What can I do from this position?
Anything.
So spin. Spin. Force me to open up. Defend yourself. Good. And again. Good. And again.
Ow.
Not so good.
Oh, what did I do wrong?
Nothing. I'm just faster. Take your guards off. We'll sit for a moment. Take a break. You must be tired. You've been running the trail all morning.
I'm not tired. I'm hungry.
Bloody hell, so am I. And today's Lambert's turn, and he can't cook anything other than noodles. If you could only cook those properly.
Cohen?
Uh-huh.
I'm still not fast enough.
You're very fast.
Will I ever be as fast as you?
I doubt it.
Hmm.
And are you... Who's the best fencer in the world?
I've no idea.
You've never known one?
I've known many who believe themselves to be the best.
Oh, what were they? What were their names? What could they do?
Hold on, girl. I haven't got an answer to those questions. Is it all that important?
Of course it's important. I'd like to know who these fences are and where they are.
Where they are? I know that.
Ah, so where?
In cemeteries.
Pay attention, Siri. We're going to attach a third pendulum now. You can manage two already. You use the same steps as for two, only there's one more to dodge. Ready?
Yes.
Focus yourself. Relax. Breathe in. Breathe out. Attack.
Ouch! Ow! Damn it!
Don't swear. Did it hit you hard?
No, it only brushed me. What did I do wrong?
You ran in at too even a pace. You sped the second half pirouette up a bit too much, and your feint was too wide, and as a result, you were carried straight under the pendulum.
But Geralt, there's no room for a dodge and turn there. They're too close to each other.
There's plenty of room, I assure you. But the gaps are worked out to force you to make arrhythmic moves. This is a fight, Siri, not ballet. You can't move rhythmically in a fight. You have to distract the opponent with your moves, confuse his reactions. Ready for another try?
Ready. Start those damn logs swinging.
Don't swear. Relax. Attack.
Well, how about that? How was that, Geralt? It didn't even brush me.
And you didn't even brush the second sack with your sword, so I repeat, this is a fight, not ballet, not acrobatics. What are you muttering now?
Nothing.
Relax. Adjust the bandage on your wrist. Don't grip the hilt so tightly. It distracts you and upsets your equilibrium. Breathe calmly. Ready?
Yes.
Go.
Ouch! May you... Geralt, it's impossible. There's not enough room for a feint and a change of foot, and when I strike from both legs without a feint...
I saw what happens when you strike without a feint. Does it hurt?
No, not much.
Sit down next to me. Take a break.
I'm not tired, Geralt. I'm not going to be able to jump over that third pendulum, even though I rest for 10 years. I can't be any faster.
And you don't have to be. You're fast enough.
Tell me how to do it, then. Half pirouette, dodge, and hit at the same time?
It's very simple. You just weren't paying attention. I told you before you started. An additional dodge is necessary. Displacement. An additional half pirouette is superfluous. The second time round, you did everything well and passed all the pendulums.
But I didn't hit the sack because... Geralt, without a half pirouette, I can't strike because I lose speed. I don't have the... What do you call it?
Impetus. That's true. So gain some impetus and energy. But not through a pirouette and a change of foot, because there's not enough time for it. Hit the pendulum with your sword.
The pendulum? I've got to hit the sacks.
This is a fight, Siri. The sacks represent your opponent's sensitive areas. You've got to hit them. The pendulums, which simulate your opponent's weapon, you have to avoid, dodge past. When the pendulum hits you, you're wounded. In a real fight, you might not get up again. The pendulum mustn't touch you, but you can hit the pendulum. Why are you screwing your nose up?
I'm not going to be able to parry the pendulum with my sword. I'm too weak. I'll always be too weak because I'm a girl.
Come here, girl. Wipe your nose and listen carefully. No strongman, mountain-toppling giant or muscle man is going to be able to parry a blow aimed at him by a Draco lizard's tail, Giga scorpion's pincers or a griffin's claws. And that's precisely the sort of weapons the pendulum simulates. So don't even try to parry. You're not deflecting the pendulum. You're deflecting yourself from it. You're intercepting its energy, which you need in order to deal a blow. A light, but very swift deflection and instantaneous, equally swift blow from a reverse half turn is enough. You're picking impetus up by rebounding. Do you see? Speed, Siri. Not strength. Strength is necessary for a lumberjack axing trees in a forest. That's why, admittedly, girls are really lumberjacks. Have you got that?
Start the pendulum swinging.
Take a rest first.
I'm not tired.
You know how to now. The same steps. Faint.
I know.
Attack.
Ha! 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 Got you! I got you, you griffin! Get out! Did you see that?
Don't yell. Control your breathing.
I did it! I really did it! I managed it! Praise me, Geralt!
Well done, Ciri. Well done, girl.
In the middle of February, the snow disappeared, whisked away by a warm wind blowing from the south, from the pass. Whatever was happening in the world, the witches did not want to know. In the evenings, consistently and determinedly, Triss guided the long conversations held in the dark hall, lit only by the bursts of flames in the great hearth, towards politics. The witcher's reactions were always the same. Geralt, a hand on his forehead, did not say a word. Vesemir nodded, from time to time throwing in comments which amounted to little more than that in his day everything had been better, more logical, more honest and healthier. Eskil pretended to be polite, and neither smiled nor made eye contact, and even managed, very occasionally, to be interested in some issue or question of little importance. Cohen yawned openly and looked at the ceiling, and Lambert did nothing to hide his disdain. They did not want to know anything. They cared nothing for dilemmas which drove sleep from kings, wizards, rulers and leaders, or for the problems which made councils, circles and gatherings tremble and buzz. For them, nothing existed beyond the passes, drowning in snow, or beyond the Gwentlech River, carrying ice floats in its leaden current. For them, only Caer Morhen existed, lost and lonely amongst the savage mountains. That evening, Triss was irritable and restless. Perhaps it was the wind howling along the great castle's walls. And that evening they were all oddly excited. The witches, apart from Geralt, were unusually talkative. Quite obviously, they only spoke of one thing. Spring. About their approaching departure for the trail. About what the trail would have in store for them. About vampires, wyverns, leshies, lycanthropes and basilisks. This time, it was Triss who began to yawn and stare at the ceiling. This time, she was the one who remained silent, until Eskil turned to her with a question which she had anticipated. "And what is it really like in the south, on the Yaruga? Is it worth going there? We wouldn't like to find ourselves in the middle of any trouble."
"What do you mean by trouble?"
"Well, you know," he stammered. "You keep telling us about the possibility of a new war, about constant fighting on the borders, about rebellions in the lands invaded by Nilfgaard. You said they're saying the Nilfgaardians might cross the Yaruga again."
"So what?" said Lambert. "They've been hitting, killing and striking against each other constantly for hundreds of years. It's nothing to worry about. I've already decided I'm going to the far south, to Sodden, Mahakam and Angren. It's well known that monsters abound wherever armies have passed. The most money is always made in places like that."
"True," Cohen acknowledged. "The neighbourhood grows deserted. Only women who can't fend for themselves remain in the villages. Scores of children with no home or care roaming around. Easy prey attracts monsters."
"And the Lord Barons and village elders," added Eskil, "have their heads full of the war, and don't have the time to defend their subjects. They have to hire us, it's true. But from what Triss has been telling us all these evenings, it seems the conflict with Nilfgaard is more serious than that. Not just some local little war. Is that right, Triss?"
"Even if it were the case," said the magician spitefully, "surely that suits you. A serious bloody war will lead to more deserted villages, more widowed women, simply hordes of orphaned children."
"I can't understand your sarcasm."
Geralt took his hand away from his forehead.
"I really can't, Triss."
"Nor I, my child."
Vesemir raised his head.
"What do you mean? Are you thinking about the widows and children?
Lambert and Cohen speak frivolously, as youngsters do. But it is not the words that are important. After all, they
defend these children," she interrupted crossly. "Yes, I know. From the werewolf, who might kill two or three a year, while an Ilfgaardian foray can kill and burn an entire settlement in an hour. Yes, you defend orphans, while I fight that there should be as few of those orphans as possible. I'm fighting the cause, not the effect. That's why I'm on Foltest of Temeria's council and sit with Faircart and Kira Metz. We deliberate on how to stop war from breaking out, and should it come to it, how to defend ourselves.
because war is constantly hovering over us like a vulture. For you, it's an adventure. For me, it's a game in which the stakes are survival. I'm involved in this game, and that's why your indifference and frivolity hurt and insult me.
Geralt sat up and looked at her.
We're witches, Triss. Can't you understand that?
What's there to understand?
The Enchantress tossed her chestnut mane back.
Everything's crystal clear. You've chosen a certain attitude to the world around you. The fact that this world might at any moment fall to pieces has a place in this choice. In mine, it doesn't. That's where we differ.
I'm not sure it's only there we differ.
The world is falling to ruins, she repeated. We can watch it happen and do nothing. Or we can counteract it.
How?
He smiled derisively.
With our emotions.
She did not answer, turning her face to the fire roaring in the hearth.
The world is falling to ruins, repeated Cohen,
nodding his head in feigned thoughtfulness. How many times I've heard that.
Me too,
Lambert grimaced. And it's not surprising. It's a popular saying of late. It's what kings say when it turns out that a modicum of brains is necessary to rule after all. It's what merchants say when greed and stupidity have led them to bankruptcy. It's what wizards say when they start to lose their influence on politics or income. And the person they're speaking to should expect some sort of proposal straight away. So cut the introduction short, Triss, and present us with your proposition.
Verbal squabbling has never amused me, the Enchantress declared, gauging him with cold eyes. Or displays of eloquence which mock whoever you're talking to. I don't intend to take part in anything like that. You know only too well what I mean. You want to hide your heads in the sand, that's your business. But coming from you, Geralt, it's a great surprise.
Triss.
The white-haired witcher looked her straight in the eyes again.
What do you expect from me? To take an active part in the fight to save a world which is falling to pieces? Am I to enlist in the army and stop Nilfgaard? Should I, if it comes to another battle for Sodden, stand with you on the hill, shoulder to shoulder, and fight for freedom?
I'd be proud, she said quietly, lowering her head. I'd be proud and happy to fight at your side.
I believe that, but I'm not gallant enough, nor valiant enough. I'm not suited to be a soldier or a hero. And having an acute fear of pain, mutilation and death is not the only reason.
You can't stop a soldier from being frightened, but you can give him motivation to help him overcome that fear.
I have no such motivation. I can't have. I'm a witcher, an artificially created mutant. I kill monsters for money. I defend children when their parents pay me to. If Nilfgaardian parents pay me, I'll defend Nilfgaardian children. And even if the world lies in ruin, which does not seem likely to me, I'll carry on killing monsters in the ruins of this world until some monster kills me. That is my fate, my reason, my life, and my attitude to the world. And it is not what I chose. It was chosen for me.
You're embittered, she stated, tugging nervously at a strand of hair, or pretending to be. You forget that I know you, so don't play the unfeeling mutant, devoid of a heart, of scruples, and of his own free will in front of me. And the reasons for your bitterness I can guess and understand. Ciri's prophecy, correct?
No, not correct, he answered icily. I see that you don't know me at all. I'm afraid of death just like everyone else, but I grew used to the idea of it a very long time ago. I'm not under any illusions. I'm not complaining about fate, Triss. This is plain, cold calculation, statistics. No witcher has yet died of old age, lying in bed dictating his will. Not a single one. Ciri didn't surprise or frighten me. I know I'm going to die in some cave which stinks of carcasses, torn apart by a griffin, lamia or manticore. But I don't want to die in a war, because they're not my wars.
I'm surprised at you, she replied sharply. I'm surprised that you're saying this. Surprised by your lack of motivation, as you learnedly chose to describe your supercilious distance and indifference. You were at Sodden, Angren and Transriver. You know what happened to Sintra, know what befell Queen Calanthe and many thousands of people there. You know the hell Ciri went through, know why she cries out at night, and I know too, because I was also there. I'm afraid of pain and death too, even more so now than I was then. I have good reason. As for motivation, it seems to me that back then I had just as little as you. Why should I, a magician, care about the fates of Sodden, Brugge, Sintra, or other kingdoms? The problems of having more or less competent rulers, the interests of merchants and barons. I was a magician. I too could have said it wasn't my war, that I could mix elixirs for the Nilfgaardians on the ruins of the world. But I stood on that hill next to Vilgefortz, next to Artu Terranova, next to Faircart, next to Enid Findebeyer and Philippa Aylhart, next to your Yennefer, next to those who no longer exist. Coral, Yoel, Vaniel. There was a moment when out of sheer terror I forgot all my spells except for one, and thanks to that spell I could have teleported myself from that horrific place back home to my tiny little tower in Maribor. There was a moment when I threw up from fear, when Yennefer and Coral held me up by the shoulders and hair. Stop! Please, stop! No, Geralt, I won't! After all, you want to know what happened there on the hill, so listen. There was a din and flames. There were flaming arrows and exploding balls of fire. There were screams and crashes, and I suddenly found myself on the ground on a pile of charred, smoking rags, and I realized that the pile of rags was Yoel, and that that thing next to her, that awful thing, that trunk with no arms and no legs, which was screaming so horrifically, was Coral. And I thought the blood in which I was lying was Coral's blood. But it was my own. And then I saw what they had done to me, and I started to howl. Howl like a beaten dog, like a battered child. Leave me alone! Don't worry, I'm not going to cry. I'm not a little girl from a tiny tower in Maribor anymore. Damn it! I'm Triss Merigold, the 14th one, killed at Sodden. There are 14 graves at the foot of the obelisk on the hill, but only 13 bodies. You're amazed such a mistake could have been made? Most of the corpses were in hard-to-recognize pieces. No one identified them. The living were hard to account for, too. Of those who had known me well, Yennefer was the only one to survive, and Yennefer was blind. Others knew me fleetingly, and always recognized me by my beautiful hair. And I, damn it, didn't have it any more.
Geralt held her closer. She no longer tried to push him away.
They use the highest magics on us, she continued in a muted voice. Spells, elixirs, amulets and artifacts. Nothing was left wanting for the wounded heroes of the hill. We were cured, patched up, our former appearances returned to us, our hair and sight restored. You can hardly see the marks, but I will never wear a plunging neckline again, Geralt. Never.
The witches said nothing. Neither did Ciri, who had slipped into the hall without a sound, and stopped at the threshold, hunching her shoulders and folding her arms.
So, the magician said after a while, don't talk to me about motivation. Before we stood on that hill, the chapter simply told us, that is what you have to do. Whose war was it? What were we defending there? The land? The borders? The people and their cottages? The interests of kings? The wizards' influence and income? Order against chaos? I don't know. But we defended it because that's what had to be done. And if the need arises, I'll stand on the hill again, because if I don't, it will make the sacrifices made the first time futile and unnecessary. I'll stand beside you, shouted Ciri shrilly. Just wait and see. I'll stand with you. Those Nilfgaardians are going to pay for my grandmother, pay for everything. I haven't forgotten.
Be quiet, growled Lambert. Don't butt into grown-ups' conversations.
Oh, sure.
The girl stamped her foot, and in her eyes a green fire kindled.
Why do you think I'm learning to fight with a sword? I want to kill him, that black knight from Sintra, with wings on his helmet, for what he did to me, for making me afraid. And I'm going to kill him. That's why I'm learning it.
And therefore you'll stop learning, said Geralt, in a voice colder than the walls of Kaer Morhen. Until you understand what a sword is, and what purpose it serves in a witch's hand, you will not pick one up. You are not learning in order to kill and be killed. You are not learning to kill out of fear and hatred, but in order to save lives, your own and those of others.
The girl bit her lip, shaking from agitation and anger.
Understood?
Ciri raised her head abruptly.
No!
Then you'll never understand. Get out!
Get out! Get
out!
Ciri spun on her heel, and stood still for a moment, undecided, as if waiting. waiting for something that could not happen. Then she ran swiftly up the stairs. They heard the door slam.
"Too severe, Wolf," said Vesemir. "Much too severe. And you shouldn't have done it in Triss's presence. The emotional ties. Don't talk to me about emotions. I've had enough of all this talk about emotions."
"And why is that?" The magician smiled derisively and coldly. "Why, Geralt? Ciri is normal. She has normal feelings. She accepts emotions naturally, takes them for what they really are. You obviously don't understand, and are therefore surprised by them. It surprises and irritates you. The fact that someone can experience normal love, normal hatred, normal fear, pain and regret, normal joy and normal sadness. That it is coolness, distance and indifference which are considered abnormal. Oh yes, Geralt, it annoys you. It annoys you so much that you are starting to think about Kaer Morhen's vaults. About the laboratorium, the dusty demijohns full of mutagenic poisons. Triss!" called Vesemir, gazing at Geralt's face, suddenly grown pale. But the enchantress refused to be interrupted, and spoke faster and faster, louder and louder. "Who do you want to deceive, Geralt? Me? Her? Or maybe yourself? Maybe you don't want to admit the truth, a truth everyone knows except you. Maybe you don't want to accept the fact that human emotions and feelings weren't killed in you by the elixirs and grasses. You killed them. You killed them yourself. But don't you dare kill them in the child. Silence!" he shouted, leaping from the chair. "Silence, Merigold!" He turned away and lowered his arms defenselessly.
"Sorry," he said quietly. "Forgive me, Triss."
He made for the stairs quickly, but the enchantress was up in a flash and threw herself at him, embracing him. "You are not leaving here alone," she whispered. "I won't let you be alone. Not right now." They knew immediately where she had run to. Fine, wet snow had fallen that evening and had covered the forecourt with a thin, impeccably white carpet. In it, they saw her footsteps. Ciri was standing on the very summit of the ruined wall, as motionless as a statue. She was holding the sword above her right shoulder, the crossguard at eye level. The fingers of her left hand were lightly touching the pommel. On seeing them, the girl jumped, spun in a pirouette, and landed softly in an identical but reverse mirror position.
"Ciri," said the Witcher, "come down, please."
It seemed she hadn't heard him. She did not move, not even a muscle. Triss, however, saw the reflection of the moon thrown across her face by the blade glisten silver over a stream of tears.
"No one's going to take the sword away from me," she shouted. "No one! Not even you!"
"Come down," repeated Geralt.
She tossed her head defiantly, and the next second leapt once more. A loose brick slipped beneath her foot with a grating sound. Ciri staggered, trying to find her balance, and failed. The Witcher jumped. Triss raised her hand, opening her mouth to utter a formula for levitation. She knew she couldn't do it in time. She knew that Geralt would not make it. It was impossible. Geralt did make it. He was forced down to the ground, thrown on his knees and back. He fell, but he did not let go of Ciri. The magician approached them slowly. She heard the girl whisper and sniff. Geralt, too, was whispering. She could not make out the words, but she understood their meaning. A warm wind howled in the crevices of the wall. The Witcher raised his head.
"Spring," he said quietly.
"Yes," she acknowledged, swallowing. "There is still snow in the passes, but in the valleys. In the valleys, it is already spring. Shall we leave, Geralt? You, Ciri and I?"
"Yes. It is high time."
Upriver we saw their towns, as delicate as if they were woven from the morning mist out of which they loomed. It seemed as if they would disappear a moment later, blown away on the wind which rippled the surface of the water. There were little palaces, white as nenuphar flowers. There were little towers, looking as though they were plaited out of ivy. There were bridges as airy as weeping willows. And there were other things for which we could find no word or name. Yet, We already had names for everything which our eyes beheld in this new, reborn world. Suddenly, in the far recesses of our memories, we found the words for dragons and griffins, mermaids and nymphs, sylphs and dryads once more, for the white unicorns which drank from the river at dusk, inclining their slender necks towards the water. We named everything, and everything seemed to be close to our hearts, familiar to us, ours, apart from them. They, although so resembling us, were alien, so very alien that, for a long time, we could find no word for their strangeness. Hen Gedimdith, Elves and Humans.
A good elf is a dead elf.
Marshal Milan Rapinek. Chapter 4. The misfortune behaved in the eternal manner of misfortunes and hawks. It hung over them for some time, waiting for an appropriate moment before it attacked. It chose its moment when they had passed the few settlements on the Gwentlech and Upper Bwina, past Ard Carach, and plunged into the forest below, deserted and intersected by gorges. Like a hawk striking, this misfortune's aim was true. It fell accurately upon its victim, and its victim was Triss. Initially it seemed nasty but not too serious, resembling an ordinary stomach upset. Geralt and Ciri discreetly tried to take no notice of the stops the Enchantress's ailment necessitated. Triss, as pale as death, beaded with sweat and painfully contorted, tried to continue riding for several hours longer, but at about midday, and having spent an abnormally long time in the bushes by the road, she was no longer in any condition to sit on a saddle. Ciri tried to help her, but to no avail. The Enchantress, unable to hold on to the horse's mane, slid down her mount's flank and collapsed to the ground. They picked her up and laid her on a cloak. Geralt unstrapped the saddlebags without a word, found a casket containing some magic elixirs, opened it, and cursed. All the phials were identical, and the mysterious signs on the seals meant nothing to him.
"Which one, Triss?"
"None of them,"
she moaned, with both hands on her belly.
I can't take them."
"What? Why?"
"I'm sensitized."
"You? A magician?
I'm allergic."
She sobbed with helpless exasperation and despairing anger.
"I always have been. I can't tolerate elixirs. I can treat others with them, but can only treat myself with amulets."
"Where is the amulet?"
"I don't know."
She ground her teeth.
"I must have left it in Caer Morhen, or lost it."
"Damn it. What are we gonna do? Maybe you should cast a spell on yourself."
"I've tried, and this is the result. I can't concentrate because of this cramp."
"Don't cry.
Easy for you to say."
The Witcher got up, pulled his saddlebags from Roach's back, and began rummaging through them. Triss curled up, her face contracted, and her lips twisted in a spasm of pain.
"Ciri?"
"Yes, Triss?"
"Do you feel all right? No unusual sensations?"
The girl shook her head.
"Maybe it's food poisoning. What did I eat? But we all ate the same thing. Geralt, wash your hands. Make sure Ciri washes her hands."
"Calm down. Drink this."
"What is it?"
"Ordinary soothing herbs. There's next to no magic in them, so they shouldn't do you any harm, and they'll relieve the cramps."
"Geralt, the cramps? They're nothing. But if I run a fever, it could be dysentery or paratyphoid."
"Aren't you immune?"
Triss turned her head away without replying, bit her lip and curled up even tighter. The Witcher did not pursue the question. Having allowed her to rest for a while, they hauled the Enchantress onto Roach's saddle. Geralt sat behind her, supporting her with both hands, while Ciri rode beside them, holding the reins and leading Triss's gelding. They did not even manage a mile. The Enchantress kept falling from Geralt's hands. She could not stay in the saddle. Suddenly, she started trembling convulsively and instantly burned with a fever. The gastritis had grown worse. Geralt told himself that it was an allergic reaction to the traces of magic in his witch's elixir. He told himself that, but he did not believe it.
"Oh, sir," said the sergeant, "you have not come at a good time. Indeed, you could not have arrived at a worse moment."
The sergeant was right. Geralt could neither contest it nor argue. The fort guarding the bridge, where there would usually be 3 soldiers, a stable boy, a toll collector, and at most a few passers-by, was swarming with people. The Witcher counted over 30 lightly armed soldiers wearing the colours of Caidwen, and a good 50 shield-bearers camping around the low palisade. Most of them were lying by campfires, in keeping with the old soldier's rule, which dictates that you sleep when you can and get up when you're woken. Considerable activity could be seen through the thrown open gates. There were a lot of people and horses inside the fort, too. At the top of the little leaning lookout tower, 2 soldiers were on duty, with their crossbows permanently at the ready. On the worn bridge, trampled by horses' hooves, 6 peasant carts and 2 merchant wagons were parked. In the enclosure, their heads lowered sadly over the mud and manure, stood umpteen unyoked oxen.
"There was an assault on the fort last night,"
the sergeant anticipated his question.
"We just got here in time with relief troops, otherwise we'd have found nothing here but charred earth." "Who were your attackers? Bandits? Marauders?"
The soldier shook his head, spat and looked at Ciri and Triss, huddled in the saddle.
"Come inside," he said. "Your enchantress is going to fall out of her saddle any minute now. We already have some wounded men there. One more won't make much difference."
In the yard, in an open roofed shelter, lay several people with their wounds dressed with bloodied bandages. A little further between the palisade fence and a wooden well with a sweep, Geralt made out 6 still bodies wrapped in sacking, from which only pairs of feet in worn, dirty boots protruded. "Lay her there by the wounded men." The soldier indicated the shelter.
"Oh, sir, it truly is bad luck she's sick. A few of our men were hurt during the battle, and we wouldn't turn down a bit of magical assistance. When we pulled the arrow out of one of them, its head stuck in his guts. The lad will peter out by the morning. He'll peter out like anything. And the enchantress who could have saved him is tossing and turning with a fever and seeking help from us. A bad time, I say. A bad time."
He broke off, seeing that the Witcher could not tear his eyes from the sacking-wrapped bodies.
"2 guards from here, 2 of our relief troops, and 2 of the others," he said,
pulling up a corner of the stiff material.
"Take a look if you wish. Ciri, step away."
"I want to see too."
The girl leaned out around him, staring at the corpses with her mouth open.
"Step away, please. Take care of Triss."
Ciri huffed, unwilling, but obeyed. Geralt came closer.
"Elves," he noted, not hiding his surprise.
"Elves," the soldier confirmed.
"Scoia'tael."
"Who?"
"Scoia'tael," repeated the soldier.
"Forest bands."
"Strange name.
It means squirrels, if I'm not mistaken."
"Yes, sir. Squirrels. That's what they call themselves in Elvish. Some say it's because sometimes they wear squirrel tails on their fur caps and hats. Others say it's because they live in the woods and eat nuts. They're getting more and more troublesome, I tell you."
Geralt shook his head. The soldier covered the bodies again and wiped his hands on his tunic.
"Come," he said. "There's no point standing here. I'll take you to the commandant. Our corporal will take care of your patient if he can. He knows how to sear and stitch wounds and set bones, so maybe he knows how to mix up medicines and whatnot too. He's a brainy chap, a mountain man. Come, Witcher."
In the dim, smoky toll collector's hut, a lively and noisy discussion was underway. A knight with closely cropped hair wearing a habergeon and yellow surcoat was shouting at 2 merchants and a greave, watched by the toll collector, who had an indifferent, rather gloomy expression, and whose head was wrapped in bandages.
"I said no!"
The knight thumped his fist on the rickety table and stood up straight, adjusting the gorget across his chest.
"Until the patrols return, you're not going anywhere. You're not going to roam the highways."
"I's to be in Davin in 2 days,"
the greave yelled, shoving a short notched stick with a symbol branded into it under the knight's nose.
"I have a transport to lead. The bailiff's going to have me head if it be late. I'll complain to the voivode."
"Go ahead and complain," sneered the knight. "But I advise you to line your breeches with straw before you do, because the voivode can do a mean bit of ass-kicking. But for the time being, I give the orders here. The voivode is far away, and your bailiff means no more to me than a heap of dung. Hey, Eunist, who are you bringing here, sergeant? Another merchant?"
"No," answered the sergeant reluctantly. "A witcher, sir. He goes by the name of Geralt of Rivier."
To Geralt's astonishment, the knight gave a broad smile, approached, and held a hand out in greeting.
"Geralt of Rivier," he repeated, still smiling. "I have heard about you, and not just from gossip and hearsay. What brings you here?"
Geralt explained what brought him there. The knight's smile faded.
You have not come at a good time, or to a good place. We are at war here, Witcher. A band of Scoia'tael is doing the rounds, and there was a skirmish yesterday. I am waiting here for relief forces, and then we'll start a counterattack.